Welcome to Storytime by Chava. We are continuing the book Once Upon a Journey, and we are up to chapter 51, Pierre Louis. The light of Chassidus began to shine in Harki due to an unexpected and dramatic event that took place long after Reb Getzel's passing. At that time, the town of Harki belonged to the estates of Prince Benedict Radzivill. He was only concerned with getting as much pleasure as possible from life, but he was a good-hearted man who was always kind to others. He was born, raised, and educated in France, and he married into the powerful Dimitrov family of Russian nobles. Benedict was a rich man even before his marriage. As a wedding gift, his wife's wealthy family gave him estates that included a number of towns, large forests, and wide areas of countryside near Moscow and in other parts of Russia. Although their wedding took place in France, the couple soon decided to move to Russia and live on their luxurious estates. Prince Radzivill had a close childhood friend named Pierre Louis, whom he loved dearly. Pierre was a classic Frenchman who dressed himself according to the top French fashions and spoke and acted in the manners typical of his homeland. He was a wise and pleasant person who always had something clever to say. Wherever he went, he was the center of attention. Everyone wanted to be his friend. Pierre and Benedict grew up together and remained at each other's side throughout the years. They spent hours chatting and partying, and they went together on long hunting trips, which was the prince's favorite sport. Benedict's marriage and his decision to move to Russia did not disturb his deep friendship with Pierre. In fact, the prince convinced his friend to join him on his Russian estates. It did not take long for the two Frenchmen to blend into the Russian nobility, and they soon became familiar figures among the noblemen of Moscow. Benedict was desperate to see Pierre marry a woman from a local Russian family in order to prevent him from returning to his homeland if he decided that he missed France. The prince eventually succeeded in convincing his dear friend to marry the daughter of one of the managers of the Dimitrov estates. Now that they were both married to local women, the two friends threw themselves completely into a life of fun and pleasure. They held frequent parties and dances for the partisan and wealthy nobles. To make it more exciting, they constantly changed the location of these events, inviting the nobles to one or another of the prince's many estates. Wherever these events were held, the local people were delighted to host such a large group of nobles. The prince and his friends rented many places to stay for themselves and their men. They bought huge amounts of food and other items from the local merchants, offering handsome payment for the services they required. Prince Benedict often chose the town of Harki to host these events, not only because the town belonged to the prince and his wife, but more importantly, because it was surrounded by dense forests full of wildlife. When Benedict first visited the town, he was immediately convinced that there was no better forest on all of his estates for hunting. He invited all of his friends to Harki for a deer hunt, which proved so successful that he kept inviting them back for more hunts. Eventually, it became customary for the prince and his best friend Pierre to host a massive hunting party twice a year, once in the summer and again in the winter. These hunting parties lasted for weeks at a time. The residents of Harki looked forward to supplying the nobles with all of their needs. Merchants and store owners prepared large quantities of food, wine, and other goods well in advance. They knew from experience that when the rich men were in a good mood during their weeks of partying, they would buy expensive gifts to take back to their wives and families. Rich fur coats, rolls of colorful fabric, jewelry, liquor, spices, and many other luxurious items. The prince and his friend enjoyed their carefree life. Then, one day, tragedy struck. Pierre's wife fell ill and died suddenly. For a long time, Pierre was heartbroken. the prince did everything possible to lift his spirit. Benedict begged Pierre to continue attending the parties and other exciting events. At first, Pierre could not truly enjoy himself. But after a while, he again threw himself into a life of fun. Now that he no longer had the responsibility of caring for his wife, he did whatever he wanted and completely lost himself in a life of pleasure. Pierre was around 55 years old when his wife died. He was healthy and at the peak of his strength and energy. He was also a social star. His reputation spread far and wide among the nobles, and he had an ever-growing number of admirers. The thought of changing his fun-filled lifestyle never entered his mind. As far as he was concerned, there was nothing serious about life at all. He lived only to endlessly chase one pleasure after another. However, it seems that heaven had other plans for Pierre's future. At that time, Rav Nissen, the Melamed of Harki, the father of Yitzchak Shaul, paid one of his regular visits to Mezhebush to speak with his Rebbe, the Baal Shem Tov. He spent a few weeks there and then prepared for his trip back to Harki. Before leaving, the tzaddik invited him to a private yechidus. There is a pasuk in Tehillim that speaks about Yeridei Hayam Ba'aniyais, those who descend into the sea in ships, who perform their work in many waters, said the tzaddik. Now, the word aniya has two meanings. It can mean a ship, and it can also mean weeping and mourning. Rav Nissen listened carefully as the Baal Shem Tov explained. When the pasuk says, those who descend into the sea, it is hinting to the neshama, the soul that descends from Shemayim. The neshama enters this world and finds itself inside a body. As far as the neshama is concerned, the body is like an ocean. Just as the waters of the ocean cover and hide everything that exists beneath its surface, the physical body hides the holiness of the neshama. The tzaddik paused, lost in thought. He then continued, not everyone is equal. Some people are on a greater spiritual level than others. Some find themselves in better circumstances than others. This is what the pasuk is teaching us. When a neshama comes into a body, it can find itself in a ship, aniya, or it can end up in a state of aniya, weeping and mourning. Some people are fortunate to be born to parents who live according to the Torah and who educate their children to do the same. Their lives are filled with holiness and yirat shamayim because their bodies, their actions, are guided by their souls. The pasuk compares these souls to sailors who guide their ships safely across the ocean. Other people, however, are less fortunate. When their souls enter their bodies, they do not find themselves in a safe ship. Instead, they are tossed about on the stormy waves of this world without the safety of a life of Torah and mitzvahs. They drown in the depths of pleasures and nonsense of the material world. These neshamas are in a state of aniya, weeping and mourning. But they are not lost forever. In order to save those who descend into the sea, those neshamas that are crying desperately for help, there are other Jews who perform their work in many waters. These people are given the mission of diving into the stormy sea in order to rescue the crying souls and to show them how to build their own ships, how to live a life of Torah and mitzvahs. And this is why I invited you here today, the Baal Shem Tov told the Melamed of Harki. I would like to give you a personal mission that involves rescuing a drowning soul. Rav Nissen was inspired by the tzaddik's powerful teaching. He waited eagerly to hear the details of his rescue mission.